This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with State Representative Henry Burns of Shreveport, the man who calls the suburban area of Houghton his home. We'll talk about his legislation, which last week cleared the House 62-24. People would be allowed to carry concealed weapons into restaurants that serve alcohol under the bill that was approved by the Louisiana House of Representatives. We'll talk with Henry Burns about this and much more. Also, the celebrated composer Robert Keir, who is in Baton Rouge, he'll be in studio to talk about his life and times and work. Man who has written at least 12 symphonies. He's here to talk about that and much more. But now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633, your local number. Outside Baton Rouge, please call 877-217-5757. You may reach us online, inkstershow@wrkf.org. We start with the celebrated composer Robert Keir, a man of immense talent who is bringing it to Baton Rouge, and actually he's been here for a few days. Robert has been one of the most prolific composers of his generation. He's written 12 symphonies, 3 chamber symphonies, 3 violin concertos. They're just an amazing amount of work, a body of work for this man who's decided to spend a week in good old Baton Rouge. Good morning.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
And in addition, he's held teaching positions at Yale, UCLA, and since 1990, you've been at the University of Oregon.
Yes, I have.
So, Eugene, Oregon to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. A little bit of a transition in weather, if nothing else.
Well, not today and not for the last few days. I brought some rain with me and now some sunshine, I hope.
Well, he's here for several events, including one tonight, 6 o'clock at the Red Shoes on Government Street. You can meet this fine gentleman. But Sunday is the Waging Peace Concert from Robert Keir. Obviously designed to accent peace and harmony in the world and in our area. And I hear that there will be 100 voices from 20 congregations. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
So how did you get involved in this?
Well, I met Robin McCullough Beatty in Santa Fe. She's the director of the Interfaith Federation of Baton Rouge. And we talked about this project. She heard a piece of mine related to this very theme. And coming from our discussion, we decided to co-create a project around this theme that would be actually written, the music written on the words of people from Baton Rouge related to the theme of violence and how we could heal that violence through waging peace.
In a few moments, we'll hear from Robin McCullough Beatty. The Waging Peace Concert will be at 4 p.m. Broadmoor Baptist Church this Sunday. Now, as far as this community, we have one of the highest murder rates in America. If you've seen a big billboard that's on Interstate 12 just outside the city, it says Baton Rouge, higher murder rate than Chicago. This is a scourge in our community. Is this something that you have become acquainted with as far as knowledge of this in the last few weeks and months?
Absolutely. Actually, over the last years, after Katrina in particular, and the situation. So many people coming here and then also finding out more about Baton Rouge. And I was just so moved to learn about what's being done in the community to try to address this and wanted to be part of that effort in any way that I could through music and through community action.
Well, what kind of music are we talking about? How do you address the topic of peace in a performance of this kind?
Well, for me, it's to engage the entire community in this effort. So what I did is I gave a workshop here in October where I talked about the effect of violence on my own life. I had a very close friend who was murdered in September, and that had affected my life in a deep way. And then also I've addressed various themes, including the theme of the Holocaust and the horrible violence of that whole period of the war. I told people about my own experience and then asked them to have a dialogue at their various tables at this particular occasion, and then to write about their experiences. We had pieces of paper, and they wrote quite a bit, very, very moving, 400 pages of first-person witness testimony about their experiences of violence, which I then have woven into a text for music, setting that to music. But we also have narrator actors who will be speaking that text. So any word that you will be hearing in this piece was written by citizens of Baton Rouge. And I have to say the testimony is among the most moving I've ever read. It's mm-hmm. incredible what the people have contributed. And it really is a symbol of how they want to work together to achieve peace and harmony in this community. I'm so moved by the collaboration that we're having.
Over 100 singers from our area will be featured at the world premiere of Waging Peace. It's an original choral composition from the significant composer, Dr. Robert Keir, the man we're listening to. The lyrics of this will be based on first-person accounts from individuals in Greater Baton Rouge, and this is part of a presentation that was made possible, or is being made possible, by the Interfaith Federation of Greater Baton Rouge. Dr. Keir, by the way, received his PhD from Harvard University. I'm sure you followed the events in Boston in the last few weeks.
I certainly have, and it's a tragedy of really global proportions when you think about how it affects so many in the world. And I'm so moved by it and what's happened, the response of people to try to help those who were injured so severely. And now what do we do to try to, in some ways, heal the situations that are related to the cause of this? We have to address this level of violence in our society.
In just a bit, we're slated to hear from Representative Henry Burns of Shreveport and Houghton. He is actually scheduled to join us from the House floor, which could be interesting. But a bill that passed the Louisiana House last week, Dr. Keir, would allow people to carry concealed weapons into restaurants that serve alcohol. I would imagine something like this might be a bit harder to pass in Oregon than it is in Louisiana.
Well, I don't know. I have to say that personally, I'm quite baffled by a lot of what's going on right now related to these debates. And I really wish that everywhere in the country and in the world, people would maybe look at how we could move in the most hopeful direction possible, what we need in order to do that, what we need to do in order to work together. It's a little bit confusing to me, this bill.
Why do you think we're fascinated so much with guns and the ability to have guns of all kinds, assault weapons, you name it? We've got the Second Amendment, and we love our guns.
Well, you know, I do understand the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and I would never speak out against that in any way. But I do think there's something to be said about balance in a society and how we achieve balance. What is it that we really need, and how does that make our lives better? Those are the questions I would be asking now.
297-5633 if you'd like to join us in our remaining time with Dr. Robert Keir, who will be conducting the world premiere from this composer, sung by a community choir of 100 voices, lyrics from our Dialogues on Peace, 4 o'clock this Sunday at the Broadmoor Baptist Church, 9755 Goodwood. Kevin, let's give a listen to some of the work from composer Robert Keir, a man who has been responsible for a dozen symphonies. This one is appropriately called White Tigers. You're smiling.
I wrote this a very long time ago, and it is about as far away in tone and feeling from what I've created for Baton Rouge as one could imagine, but I don't know how you got a hold of that. That's
nice.
Really interesting.
No, but the one for Baton Rouge, how will it be different than the memorable White Tigers?
Well, White Tigers is more like the beginning of the journey, in mm-hmm. the sense that there's quite a lot of emotion and color and excitement and drama in the music you just heard. And that's where we start in this journey of the piece that I've created. We start with a movement called Listen, in which the chorus is actually telling the story of violence in Baton Rouge through the words of the people who gave their first-person witness testimony about it. And then we proceed through a variety of stages. The second is understand. How do we understand violence? We need to ask questions in order to do that. It's a movement about questioning. The third movement is about forgiveness. The fourth is collaborate. It's not enough just to do individual action, but we have to work together. And then in the final movement, it's proclaim. It's reaching toward hope, the hope that we need in order to deal with this violence.
Well, tonight you can meet Dr. Keir at the Red Shoes on Government, 2303 Government Street, at 6 p.m. And then Sunday, you can meet him and hear his fine work, Waging Peace Concert, 4 o'clock at the Broadmoor Baptist Church. And the person who is most responsible for Dr. Keir's week in Baton Rouge is Robin McCullough Beatty. She heads the Interfaith Federation for Greater Baton Rouge, has for the last 5 years, and this is quite a coup getting this this nice man to come this way and spend quality time with this community.
It's quite an exciting project, without a doubt. Reverend Charles T. Smith, the late pastor of Shiloh Missionary Baptist, when he was the president of the Federation, he began the Sounds of Community Concert, and his vision was that music could bring people together, and that's what's been happening over the years. So we thought it was a natural fit to have this world premiere with the Sounds of Community Concert. I think people are really moved that they have the opportunity to sing these words from brothers and sisters, people in our community. And we really go from naming the violence to trying to understand to offer the prayer for forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And move to collaborate, and then on to proclaim.
How active is the organization that you are in charge of, the Interfaith Federation? What are you doing right now to address this topic other than the visit by Dr. Keir?
Well, it has. I think it did start in the fall at the prayer breakfast, and when we asked people to name the impact of violence on their lives and then their hope for peace. And so people have been thinking and praying about this since the fall. And so when we come together, already there has been a collaboration of the musicians to make this happen. But we hope that Waging Peace doesn't end with a concert, but it's really the inspiration. And we hope to see congregations working with each other, individuals finding their own way to wage peace in their own life and in the community.
Well, tonight you may meet Dr. Keir at the Red Shoes, and Monday night, May 6th, after the concert on Sunday, Dr. Keir will be at B'nai Israel on Kleinert Avenue at 7 p.m. So he has a busy schedule in this area. And the big one is 4 p.m. Sunday at Broadmoor Baptist Church. He's a man who has performed all over the United States, and I suspect internationally as well. Yeah?
Yes.
And you've spent a week in Baton Rouge by way of Eugene, Oregon, and we thank you for joining us today. What's your feeling about the country and this community and others you visit regarding the issue that is at hand right now, peace?
Well, I have to say that this is the second time I've been in Baton Rouge, and the first time I fell in love with the city and with the people. I think it's an extraordinary place in the world, and it's an amazing community. The people are so kind and gracious, and there's really a sense of wanting to address this issue that we're talking about in a real way, and that makes a difference. This issue is throughout our country and throughout the world now, as we see, and it takes the will of a people who are strong and really want to look at it, name the violence, and then deal with it directly to make a change. And I think that spirit is here in Baton Rouge, and I'm so glad that I could be part of that and help people to do that in any way that I can.
Well, 3112 Convention Street is the office of the Interfaith Federation, and if you'd like more information, you may call Robin and her staff at 225-267-5600. But you may also see Robin and Dr. Robert Keir and 100 voices this Sunday, 4 o'clock, Broadmoor Baptist Church. Thank you, Dr. Keir. Thank you, Robin McCullough Beatty. Back
Thanks.
With Henry Burns.
Thanks so much.
This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. And our guest at this time is Representative Henry Burns, Republican from Houghton, which, of course, is right outside of Shreveport. Last week, the House voted 62-24 for a measure sponsored by Representative Burns that would allow people in our state to carry concealed weapons into restaurants that serve alcohol. The Senate, of course, still has to weigh in on this, and Representative Burns is here to talk with us about this and maybe a few other items. And this is the most unusual of interviews because Representative Burns, when we caught him this morning, is doing his job on the House floor. And I understand that you are now in a closet talking with us. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's where they have a copy machine and the paper and pens and staples and all this stuff. And you'll be able to hear a little bit of the background noise from time to time. And we'll be doing house cleaning for the next few minutes,
well,
so I'll be okay.
You may want to keep the door to the closet closed, at least for the next few minutes, and we look forward to a discussion. Now, this bill, it started out doing something else and ended up being more expansive than you anticipated, didn't it?
That is correct. I introduced House Bill 48 to address the crime of possession of firearm and alcohol beverage, and which is a misdemeanor, and I basically only addressed law enforcement officers, and that was my intentions to eliminate the requirement that a law enforcement officer be acting in the performance of his duty in order to be exempt from the crime, which was a misdemeanor, because when you talk to people in general and you see them and they go to a restaurant and they see a police car or they see a police officer sitting having lunch with his family or his colleagues, whatever, you feel better. You just automatically feel better about, the safety of it and all. But in fact, under current law, they're actually committing a misdemeanor if they're not in the performance of their official duty, like serving, arresting, responding or whatever. And I just thought that we needed to clean that language up, and that's all I was really approaching. And I think some of the people amended the bill, what they thought was a poison pill, maybe to kill the bill. But I, tongue-in-cheek, reluctantly accepted the amendment, which expanded it to the concealed carry aspect of it also.
So the bill that you have was actually helped by the opponents who thought they were going to kill it. Instead, 62 House members voted yay. Now it goes to the Senate. Do you think that it'll pass?
That is correct.
Do you think it'll pass?
Yeah. Well, I think it will, because if you look at the – there are still restrictions. The owner or the leasee of the restaurant that serves alcohol can still make it gun-free. Or if you're an employee or owner of the location, you can still maintain a weapon. And law enforcement who's vested in enforcement of his authority or acting in the performance of his official duty can maintain his weapon there also. And that's really the bill that I introduced. And the amendment then expanded it to a point where concealed carry folks who, have a very admirable record of safety and maintaining, a great number of my friends do have concealed carry permits, and I'll tell you, I have never seen people who are more responsible in maintaining the safety and security. And in fact, in most cases, I've never seen the weapon. They take it as a holy ride, and they believe they have the right to protect themselves if some incident happens. As rare as it is, when you feel more comfortable, if you knew somebody there could intervene, if someone came in intent to doing harm to it could be one of a number of things. It could be, a situation associated with mental illness, domestic abuse, child custody. It could be just any number of things that causes a person to go off the deep end and come out to do harm, taking innocent people with them. So, I feel better knowing that people have a chance for the, intervention.
297-5633 for State Representative Henry Burns. We've talked just a few moments ago about the high murder rate in Baton Rouge. Of course, New Orleans is even higher, and Shreveport has a high rate. But there aren't that many murders in restaurants. Unfortunately, there are some, but do we really need this, Representative Burns?
Well, if you'll talk to a law enforcement officer who is sworn to serve and protect and say, where do you want to be without your weapon, okay, they'll tell you, nowhere, because they feel like that that under their job description, that is their responsibility. Plus, you know, some things have changed. Back when I was a little boy back in Chungle, Louisiana, growing up, we didn't lock our doors, we rode our bicycles, and never felt threatened. But that's not the world we live in today. We know that bad things can happen on our home shore here in the United States, and under the Homeland Security concept, not only are our police officers, but also our firemen are part of our Homeland Security concept, and they too are our men and women in uniform, much like our people in the military service. So, and then you also have the Patriots, you know, what I call the Patriots, the Second Amendment right proponents that they also feel that they have a right to protect their families, their property, and like I say, they have a very enviable record of being very responsible in maintaining in the use of their weapon. In fact, you know, you'd be surprised, you know, who actually has concealed carry weapons. I mean, it could be ministers, doctors, mothers, grandmothers, a great number of people that, and of course, it's been increased now because of some of the instances that happened across our country.
297-5633 for Representative Henry Burns, who's graciously joined us this morning from the House floor in the closet on the House floor and downtown. And good morning. You're on the air with Representative Burns.
Good morning, Representative. I urge you as strongly as I can with every fiber of my being to go back to your original bill and get rid of this crazy amendment. It is ridiculous to allow people into bars where there's alcohol with guns. I don't care how good you think that your friends are that have concealed carry permits. There are a lot of people who are overly aggressive, and alcohol makes it worse. Or they'll be impaired even if they have a gun and someone else can take it from them. It's just a combustible mix. It's a bad idea. Go back to your original bill. And I urge everybody else to call in and tell the representative how you feel about this, and I urge you to listen to your constituents.
All right. Thank you, Ann. Representative, would you respond to Ann, please?
Well, of course, the response I have in my area is they're excited about the expansion. But let me just say one thing, too. This also amended the definition of what an alcohol beverage outlet is. It could be a bar that's at another area of the restaurant. And, of course, if you're consuming alcohol, whether you're a law enforcement or an individual, that would also cause you to have to, not have your weapon because, the caller is totally correct. You don't want someone who's inebriated or having their judgment change because they've consumed alcohol. So, there's a lot more detail into the bill other than the fact that, the bar, because it is many of your restaurants, most of your major chains, plus the other aspect of it, too, is that many of the restaurants can maintain their location gun-free. You know, it could be a chain, it could be just a local restaurant, and actually there are some restaurants that actually encourage people to maintain their weapons. So, I can understand the controversy of it. It wasn't the direction that I was taking with the bill because I thought it was a little bit too early in time. I think as more and more things happen in our country, probably we maybe can see the need for it. But I do agree, alcohol and weapons do not mix.
Shelby James says, if you, Representative Burns, had confidence in your belief that more guns make us safer, you would introduce legislation allowing every citizen to carry guns into the state capitol and in Tiger Stadium.
Well, there's several ways that a person can be inebriated or their personality can change, and you have to admit a sporting event brings out the best and worst in all of us. So the fact is there are areas that are considered, Tiger Stadium, of course, is gun-free, and many other locations are also gun-free, and that does not change that.
Gaston in Millerville, good morning. You're on with Representative Henry Burns. Gaston.
Hey, Representative Burns, I have to disagree with your legislation. I think you're pandering to Second Amendment fascists. But frankly, Jim, I wanted to compliment you on the two types of shows. You got a music show and gun control, and I wanted to make a a direct correlation here for all you listeners. It's very rare for someone to be killed playing a musical instrument. And I want to make one other point real quick before I get off the air, is that guns are idiot-proof. Any idiot can pull a trigger. It does not take any intellectual confidence, and our civilization is regressing by pandering to these gun-toting fascists. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Gaston. Kobe writes, Representative Burns, we don't allow citizens to operate a vehicle while consuming alcohol. We don't allow open containers in vehicles. Why does mixing alcohol and firearms seem like a good idea to you?
Well, that's totally not even germane to the bill. Of course, opponents would try to make the corollary there, and I understand that. But you have to understand what the definition of an alcoholic outlet is. It could be a restaurant that serves one drink in a year, and then, many restaurants where you take your family to eat that do serve alcohol. Now, I'm Catholic, and I don't drink. That's kind of unusual, maybe. I don't know. There's probably a lot of Catholics.
Well, do you take wine with communion?
Well, I do that. Amen, brother. Yeah, I do. I do take communion. That is correct. So maybe I stretched it too far, but that's when I become one in with my Lord and Savior. So that is the exception I do make. That's
okay.
No doubt.
All right. Your bill. I think the opponents are probably shaking their heads and thinking, "My God, what have we done here?" Because it may very well pass, and the governor has shown a great propensity to embrace any kind of pro Second Amendment legislation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing about this, here's what the opponents need to realize: okay, that it does not change the autonomy of freedom for people to choose within their establishments, their restaurants, or whatever. If they want to maintain those places as gun-free, they absolutely have that right, and this bill does not change that.
297-5633 is your number for State Representative Henry Burns, nice guy, joining us from the closet of the House floor at the state capitol. HB in Denham Springs. Good morning, HB. You're on the air with Representative Burns.
Good morning, Representative. I'm a retired officer with a post-certification to carry CCW. Given the times that we live in, I am far more concerned with the people who are carrying weapons illegal than I am those that are carrying them legal. Thank you, sir.
Hey, amen. That's a great distinction he just made. People who are responsible, people who do things appropriately and get their training and get their certification, those are the people that we're talking about being able to maintain their weapons. The criminal or the person that has bad intentions doesn't respect the law and is not going to follow the law. And, if you're in a situation, just think of all the things that's happened in the last few years. If there had been a person there that could have maybe stopped a tragedy and had minimized it to some degree, and I know there's been a lot of losses. And it does break my heart. But then, too, if my family happened to be at one of those places and someone intervened and spared their life, if you help a person, they're grateful. But if you help a person's child, they become a hero. And you never know. And let me say this: who would ever thought that we'd ever even needed a discussion like this? It would have been my hope and prayer that. We could be more like in the Garden of Eden and not have no problems, but that's not, unfortunately, it's not the world we live in.
Actually, they did have some problems in the Garden of Eden, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, there was an apple deal. Yeah, but I kind of like oranges, so I mean.
There you go. Well, there are a few other gun measures. House Bill 5 passed on a vote of 67-25 amid concerns from some that it violates the U.S. Constitution Supremacy Clause. Which allows federal law to usurp state law. It would prevent the federal government from enforcing any law in Louisiana restricting the possession of semi-automatic firearms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, Representative Jim Morris, I believe, carried that bill, and he's a hunting enthusiast and a big Second Amendment rights advocate and all. And people who are responsible nurture these things as treasures of responsibility. And those that do not, you can't legislate morality or people that will follow certain rules and regulations. And it's a tough topic to address, but we do live in a country that believes we have a right to defend and maintain and enjoy the life we so choose. That's the freedom that we do have. And if someone is irresponsible or disrespectful of that, then if they commit a crime, they're prosecuted, and time. I think these kinds of issues will play out in time, and also probably in the court. So to determine what the eventual outcome of all the legislation will be is beyond my grasp at this point. So, but what you got to do is follow your heart, what you know. And I know with my own particular legislation, I can see merit and strength in it. We'll just see how it plays out when it gets to the Senate side.
And another measure, House Bill 8, would make it illegal for a person, agency, or entity to make public any information, such as names and addresses, about concealed weapon permit holders or applicants. That one passed on a 76-18 vote. My guess is you voted for that one as well, Representative Burns.
That is correct. Representative Jeff Thompson had that bill, and we're in bordering legislative district. He's District 8, I'm District 9. And basically what we're saying is that if you want to maintain your weapon and not, publicize it, so, because you could become a target from several different reasons. One, for people that maybe disapprove of you having a weapon, or it could be, it just provides you, once again, another list for people to commercialize, to give you that block number or that 800 number or whatever. And you certainly wouldn't want that information in the newspaper, because there's some stigma attached to it in some people's mind, and of course you become respected by others. So and that's what's great in America. You do have a great variety of in the right to express your feelings and express your thoughts, pretty openly here. And I do want to protect that.
Well, and you've got a governor who will sign any gun bill that gets to his desk, I'm sure. And right now we've got huge problems, as you know, regarding the budget. Where do we stand regarding the budget situation right now, Representative?
Well, I'll be honest with you. When I came down to this particular session, I thought probably a review of education policies was probably going to be the big-ticket item from the education side, and the other being the budget. And when the governor Dashon his policy and shelved it, I'll be quite honest with you, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out in the next month, because there's a physical hawks that want to rewrite HB1. But the bottom line is, it probably, if we all don't get on the same sheet, the Senate will even drive probably all the budget functions for the state for next year.
Well, we'll let you get back to the floor and leave the closet, and we thank you for joining us today, and hopefully we'll talk again soon, Representative Burns. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Hey, it was very enjoyable. And
this is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number, and we're joined in studio. A surprise visit, and a pleasant surprise at this, from John Word of the Baton Rouge Advocate, and we're here to talk about a few things. I wanted John, who's the foremost music critic in this area, to discuss the passing and the funeral in a few minutes of one George Jones. And speaking of George, as in George's, there's a headline, George's buys Advocate. It was a big day at the newspaper yesterday, wasn't it?
Mr. George's was there, and his wife, and two of the people he's brought in who formerly with the Times-Picayune. And it was a very nice introduction.
Well, Kevin Gallagher, our producer, was on hand for this august event, and it is a big day. The Manships have held this newspaper. The family has, I guess, for more than a century. And a new man in town from New Orleans, a Tulane graduate, John Georges, who built a company that he inherited into a billion-dollar empire, and now has added the Baton Rouge Advocate, the state's largest daily newspaper, to his portfolio. Second-generation Greek-American, it's quite a success story. And when we have John on the show, as I'm sure we will sometime soon, we'll talk to him again. He saved the life of Peter Frampton back many years ago when John was a teenager.
John Georges?
John Georges, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he saved Peter Frampton's life. That might be a good feature for you, you know, if you want to kiss up to the boss and, you know, do something about music and the publisher of the newspaper, that would be a good way to do it.
Yeah, they met with the employees, groups of employees, and couple of different sessions, and I was very impressed.
Well, he's an impressive guy, and this is a bold move. And there are, as you know, newspapers in America right now are such that there aren't a lot of people diving in, and he is diving in. And we're talking about a substantial acquisition. Kevin, you were there yesterday. Did anybody, any of the media corps, ask anything about the cost of the sale, how much it cost?
Jim, there was no real opportunity for question and answer during the main portion.
Now, imagine that. You got a media entity calling a press conference, and they don't answer questions. That's not a very good start, is it? Why didn't you just yell the question like Sam Donaldson saying, how much was it? How much you pay for it? But I'd like to know. It's apparently... it's $30 million in debt that he is taking on, and I'm sure a substantial investment on top of that. But John Wirt has been at The Advocate for how long?
About 20 years.
20 years. You have been there covering all kinds of performers, and one of those we talked about not so long ago, who was in this area for, I guess, one of his final performances, George Jones, a man who... made the front page of the New York Times Saturday, appropriately so, considered the voice in country music. We started with a fine classical composer in Robert Keir. Now we're talking about George Jones. This is a man who transcended country and Western music, didn't he?
Well, he's known as often called the greatest of all country singers, and his song, He Stopped Loving Her Today, is often said to be the best, greatest country song ever written, ever performed, and it's a classic for sure. A song about a man who loves someone for so long that he doesn't stop loving her until he stops breathing. So there's the ultimate country song. He stops breathing, and they put a wreath upon his door.
Well, at today's funeral, which will be in a few minutes, among those who are scheduled to speak or play include Charlie Daniels, Ronnie Millsap, Tanya Tucker, but also former First Lady Laura Bush is going to say something, as is former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, and CBS Washington correspondent Bob Schieffer. They'll all make remarks, and it's at the Grand Ole Opry, isn't it? Isn't that where the funeral is?
Let's see. I know it's being broadcast. Yes, it's being broadcast on multiple TV networks and radio, the way that you'd broadcast the funeral of a pope or a president.
It is at the Opry House in Nashville, starting at 10 o'clock our time, and you can bet there'll be a packed house to say goodbye to George Jones, who spent a lot of time through the years in Louisiana. He had a connection to Tallulah, and as many artists have, they spent time in Louisiana. Seems to be something in the water here that we produce people of significance in all kinds of music.
Oh, it's a great musical state. It's amazing the amount of musicianship and songwriters and performers and singers all throughout the state, from New Orleans to Shreveport.
George Jones, he performed here, what, has it been a year and a half ago?
He performed at the Mahalia Jackson Theater in New Orleans,
right,
most recently. That would have been his final performance in Louisiana,
River Center less than 2 years ago, I think. And you were on this show and talked about that, and I remember you saying that you were impressed with him, even though his skills were obviously diminished.
I reviewed George Jones a few times in this time I've been here, and he's played in Baton Rouge. And the last time I was able to find out that I reviewed him was November of 2008. He was at the Baton Rouge River Center, He was 77 years old at the time. And I recall his voice being...
How long ago was that?
2008 of November. Now, I might have missed something looking through the files, but that was the latest one I could find. I also reviewed him in 1993 when he came to LSU, the Assembly Center. And he had, his voice was hoarse when he played at LSU, and he apologized to the people. And his voice was not strong when he played in 2008. And I mentioned that, but even though his voice was weaker mm-hmm. than what we heard in his prime, he was still George Jones, and he had that phrasing and that delivery, and he was there in presence, and sometimes that's enough.
Nancy on Government Street asked John if Stand By Your Man from Tammy Wynette, the former wife of George Jones, was inspired by the tempestuous relationship between George and Tammy.
Yeah, that's another one of the greatest of all country mm-hmm. country songs. I'm not sure of the chronology. I'm not sure who wrote it, whether Tammy wrote it or... Right now, I don't have that in front of me. That was quite a relationship. And, you know, I remember that Tammy Wynette's funeral was also broadcast on at least the Nashville Network or CMT, and it was quite moving.
Well, George Jones, born 12 September 1931, died April 26, 2013, 81 years, a full life, to say the least. The man used to, in his own words, do fistfuls of cocaine. So he survived a life of excess for many years.
Had alcoholism as well.
Had a big drinking problem, and a couple of his wives took keys away from him, and he had lawnmower access, or riding mower things.
That's one of the legends that is, in fact, I think a fact, because he had a very serious auto accident about 1999, and that damaged his vocal cords. He could have easily died in that. He was drunk when he had that accident.
Well, the drinking and drug abuse usually take people out much sooner than 81, and fortunately for us who appreciated his music, we got a lot of years of listening pleasure from the voice, George Glenn Jones. John Georges bought The Advocate yesterday, and John Wirt reports for The Advocate on music and other matters, and last time John was with us, somehow it was a listener who prompted this. We got into favorite Robert De Niro movies. And somebody said they liked The King of Comedy above all others. And lo and behold, right after that, John, you pointed out at the Tribeca Film Festival, they had a salute, a 30-year salute to none other than The King of Comedy from Robert De Niro.
And Robert De Niro is very closely associated with that festival, so that that's a logical move for them.
Well, that was a film that, as I think back on it, it's kind of a hidden jewel. Jerry Lewis is in that film, and if you haven't seen it, it's quite
I guess you'd call it a cult classic.
Quite a movie, The King of Comedy. Jazz Fest, do you get into Jazz Fest?
Yeah, I was there last weekend, and I wish I could be there today because it begins today for the final 4 days and the final weekend, and I have to be here to do some work at The Advocate most of today. But yes, it begins today, and today they have Widespread Panic, the jam band from Austin, Texas. They have Patti Smith, the punk rock poet from New York and New Jersey, and they have another big weekend, I'm sure.
Well, the Jazz Fest is such that now it's hard to breathe at times. There are so many people there. Has it gotten too big?
Well, that's a question for the organizers to answer or solve. So it does get crowded. That's a finite space.
Mm-hmm.
But and when you have people like Bruce Springsteen and Fleetwood Mac are going to be there Saturday, and the Black Keys, who are a hot younger act from Nashville, you do attract a huge audience, especially something like Springsteen or John Bon Jovi. Huge group in front of the Acura stage, which is the largest stage and venue area that they have.
Artists love to play there, though.
They do love it because there's something special about it, and it's one of the world's greatest music festivals for sure. Certainly, and I guess it would have to be in the top five.
Top five. I think you're right. Started, I think, in 1970, so this would be year number 44 for the
44th year. You're
Jazz
right.
Jazz Fest, and it's such that many artists who really aren't
what would be considered jazz artists. They still play there, and they love being in New Orleans, and they love being at the fairgrounds amid hundreds of thousands of their closest friends.
Well, not hundreds of thousands. Well, over the course of the weekend, yes. But I think the biggest, the largest figure I ever heard was 90,000 attendance in a single day. I'm going on memory now.
That's a lot of people.
Which was a great deal of people.
Yeah, a lot of people in that area. 297-5633 or 877-217-5757, inkstershow@wrkf.org. In our remaining time with music and film writer John Wirt. He's been with The Advocate for 20 years. And of course, John is now working for a new regime at The Advocate, and he's joining us today, and we thank him for doing it. And some of these questions John can't answer, nor can
I. No, I can't answer a lot of questions.
About the new management at The Advocate. But one that I kind of like from Alice in Lafayette, she says, was Brother Jimmy Swaggart, the landlord, was he at the event yesterday? Kevin Gallagher's shaking his head no.
I didn't see him either.
Well, I would think the landlord would be invited, huh?
Well,
if he turns off the power, everything's over for a while at the Advocate.
They're going to pay. I'm sure Mr. Georges will pay the rent.
I would think so. But it is something that in Louisiana we have a guy who was a candidate for governor who made his fortune in gambling, John Georges, who buys The Advocate, and his landlord is Brother Jimmy Swaggart.
Only in Louisiana.
Only in Louisiana. And Jimmy Swaggart is the first cousin of Jerry Lee Lewis and Mickey Lee Gilley.
We have all these connections.
Yes, we do. Two music icons. And Jerry Lee Lewis is one of the few people, John, who, when he dies, and it's obviously going to come soon, he's almost 78 years old, it will create the same kind of interest, I think, that George Jones is receiving today and throughout this last week.
Jerry Lee Lewis is an amazing character, a great figure in the history of rock and roll, and he's had this crazy life, much like George Jones. They're practically cousins in a spiritual and musical sense.
And Jerry Lee, when he was 27, didn't he marry his 13-year-old cousin?
The numbers are something like that, yes.
Yeah, today you would go to jail for that sort of thing, but Jerry Lee's always played by different rules.
And that ruined his career.
Well, it didn't ruin it, but it didn't help it either.
It stalled it very much.
It stalled it and sent it backward, no doubt. Yeah. It was a scandal, even for Jerry Lee Lewis. It's like Lynn Sanderson was on this program a few years back, and he said that he was at a concert with Jerry Lee Lewis, and some woman was yelling from the crowd, "Jerry Lee, I want to marry you, I want to marry you." And he stopped the concert, and he said, "Have you seen my record?"
Good response.
Yeah. Well, it's something symbolic about Louisiana that John Georges is the publisher of the largest daily newspaper in Louisiana, that is in a building that is owned and operated by Jimmy Lee Swaggart.
You are the person who would point that out, Jim.
And I didn't see anything in the stories today about it, but the Daily New Orleans edition, too, is quite prominent with a nice photo of the photogenic Mr. Georges. I understand.
That's yesterday's paper.
Yeah, well, okay. And 30,000 or so subscribers, pretty close to it in New Orleans, right?
They had amazing success. They exceeded their expectations very quickly with the New Orleans edition.
Okay. Well, the press conference yesterday had Mitch Landrieu, the mayor of New Orleans, who showed up along with Governor Bobby Jindal and Kip Holden, the mayor of Baton Rouge. Remember, can we pull that cut from Governor Jindal after the election in 2011 in which he blamed The Advocate for only getting 50% in his hometown? So Bobby Jindal, who got 66% statewide, did more poorly in his home city than he did in the rest of the state. But right now, according to polls, the governor is now at 38% statewide, not 50%. And in the Q&A after the election, Jim Shannon of WAFB asked the governor about why he didn't do so well in Baton Rouge, and he said, because of The Advocate. The Advocate's been a tenacious reporting source for this governor and others before him, and I'm sure it will continue to be so under the tutelage of John Georges, and it's because of people like John Wirt that the newspaper has been such a strong entity in our community.
Newspapers are very important to a community. It has to do with the life of of the civil life of the community and people being involved in the place where they live. It's so important to democracy in general.
There you go. Can we get a little George Jones as we head to the finish line here, Kevin Gallagher?
I used to spend my nights out in a bar room. Liquor was the only love I'd known. But you rescued me from reaching for the bottom.
And you brought me. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll be back tomorrow. And thanks to John Wirt for stopping in for a surprise visit. And for Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.